My name's John Galloway. I work for Microsoft. I've been at Microsoft 6 years now. I thought they'd fire me after two, but I'm still around. And I've been a web developer since, I think, 97 professionally. So been having a ton of fun with it. It's way too fun of a job. I always feel like somebody's going to figure out, like, they shouldn't be paying us to do it. But I'm still riding it out. So I'm going to be talking about ASP.NET 5 today. But in order to do that, I'm going to start by talking about ASP.NET in 2015, ASP.NET in general, because it's important to get kind of the context of what's going on. So here's what we shipped in August with Visual Studio 2015. So we've got the compilers on the bottom. We just shipped Roslyn, which is this cool new compiler that can be swapped in. It's open source. We've got the .NET framework libraries and the .NET framework. This is a full .NET framework. This is, you know, the old-time .NET framework that you would install on your desktop or your server, and it includes ASP.NET, but it also includes, you know, web forms and WinForms and all, you know, WCF and all kinds of stuff, right? And then on top of that, we've got ASP.NET 4.6. So we just shipped this in August. This is totally new, totally supported, you know, brand new, exciting stuff. But also, we're adding in ASP.NET 5. So the important thing to get here out of this is ASP.NET 5 runs on top of all that stuff that we just shipped, the whole .NET framework 4.6. All right? Nothing scary, just some new stuff, just a little bit of new stuff. Oops, we just added some crazy stuff in here too. So remembering that ASP.NET 5 still runs on the .NET framework that you know, that you're used to, we also are introducing this new .NET Core. All right, .NET Core, you'll notice we got the logos here. .NET Framework only runs on Windows. .NET Core also runs on Windows, but then it additionally runs on Mac and Linux. And it runs, instead of running on the .NET Framework libraries, it runs on the .NET Core libraries. A cool thing is it runs on the same compiler, that Roslyn compiler, open source, cool new compiler we just finished up. So that supports both of these frameworks. So ASP.NET 5 can continue to run on the framework you know, and it can also run on this new framework. Here's what's RTM. This is what shipped, RTM released to manufacturing or downloading or whatever, but this is what we just shipped. So that's all the stuff that's officially released. So the stuff that's not ASP.NET 5, .NET Core, et cetera, we're still working on it. Okay, we're shipping the release candidate in November, which is this month, so it's coming out very soon. So that is not yet released. And here's what's open source. So you'll see, for instance, ASP.NET 4.6, we've got MVC, and a lot of the stuff in ASP.NET 4.6 is open source. All of ASP.NET 5 is open source. .NET Core open source. The entire stack that you see on the right there is open source. All right, and this kind of open source is not the kind of open source where it's like we'll let you look at the source code. This is source where you can go out on GitHub, you can watch the commits as they go in, you can put in pull requests. This is fully open source. So to compare the stacks, I'll just do that. And I don't know, can you read this? It's kind of small, right? I don't know. But the general idea here, I've got comparison left and right side. So the right side over there is ASP.NET 4.6. So you'll see that whole stack is kind of the traditional Microsoft web dev stack. It's Windows, it's IIS, it's all that kind of stuff where we assumed if you're building ASP.NET, you're running on our stack. And you'll see this purple one on the far left, this is our new stack. This is the new world here. And so we're assuming a lot less. You could be running on Windows, you could be running on Mac, you could be running on Linux. And because of that, a lot of other stuff has to change too. We're not running on IIS anymore. So instead, you'll see here we've got, I love to use laser pointers, instead of IIS, now we've got Kestrel, which is a new web server we're building. If you've built with Node before, the same way kind of that you use a Node server and then you proxy to it from your actual web server, that's what Kestrel is. It's a light, tight, open source server just for ASP.NET 5. You'll see another important thing here, which is on the left, here where we had all our kind of our assemblies and our packages and everything. There were a lot of different ways you would get things. Some were installed, some were buried away in the GAC, some were assembly references. We've really, really embraced packages now in ASP.NET 5, so that means everything's pulled in via NuGet. And that's good for a few reasons. One is we can ship you things faster. As there are new things coming out, you don't have to wait for a big new release of the .NET framework or for some big library release. We can ship you a .NET a NuGet package, you know, any minute. And you can, of course, keep using the ones you've got, but we can make new ones available to you. Another thing that's great with using NuGet and packaging in general is that you can package up your application. So what this means is you can take your app, you can publish it out to a folder, and that's your entire application, including the .NET framework. So now we're not, whereas before, we had this whole .NET framework layer down there that was kind of assumed that was on your server and your web application just had to kind of hope everything was right underneath it. Now, your web application can bring its own .NET framework with it. So in that folder, it's got a NuGet package that is, you know, the compiler, that is the framework library. So it's everything you need to run your app. So if I had time, I actually could take an application here, build it on Windows, pop it on a USB drive, give it to one of you, you pop it in your laptop and you run it. You don't have to have anything installed. You don't have to be running the same operating system. I could build it on Windows, pop it in your Linux laptop, your Mac laptop, and you could run it. In fact, we did demos of this at NDC this previous summer where we tried to see how many different things we could publish to in an hour. We built an app on, you know, we built applications on Windows and we, you know, popped it over to Mac and, you know, we published it to Docker. We even put it on a Raspberry Pi running Windows 10 IoT. So, I mean, it really is a portable framework. And here again, you know, everything that's in blue over there, that is open source. So really pretty much everything that we're able to open source, the entire stack that's available over, up on top of the operating system is open source for you now. Okay, so I mentioned that it's open source and that it's real open source. So I just to make that clear, here's the, let's pop over to, oops. Let's go to a browser, let's go to GitHub. So this is the ASP.NET organization on GitHub. So you'll see here we've got tons of different stuff. We've got, like for instance, we've got MVC. And you can go in, here's the MVC repo. So it was last updated 15 hours ago. We can take a look at the commits. So you can see everything. There's no kind of secret repository or secret bug tracker or secret anything about this anymore. Okay? So you can go in, you can see exactly, these are all the devs on the team. These are also community devs, because people in the community are building things and submitting patches, et cetera. And as far as quality, if you're worried about that, everything that anyone that submits a patch, you submit a patch, it goes through the same quality checks, the same, you know, policy checks and localization and all that stuff that we go through. You can also see here, here are the issues, right? So, oops. So here's our issues list. And you can go in, if you've got a problem, something's not working for you, or you just don't like the APIs or how things work, you can go in and file a bug. And some people might think, you know, like, oh, you're telling me to file a bug. I did that before on Connect once and nobody ever got back to me. This is real, like these are, like I said, this is the bug list that everyone works through on the ASP.NET team, right? So you can go through and you can say, I'm just picking one at random. This is the conversation. There's not much of a conversation on that one. Well, it is a new one, right? So, but you know, you can go through and you can pick one, and you'll see on a lot of these, you'll have conversations, people inside and outside of Microsoft. This is the public conversation of what should we do about this issue, all right? So the important thing to take out of this, you know, I'm kind of breaking this talk into three bits. The first is kind of, what and why is ASP.NET 5? Okay, so part of my goal here with this is to not scare you. because I think we've been talking about ASP.NET 5 so much at Microsoft. We're excited about it. It's the new kind of the new thing that sometimes we give the impression that it's the only thing we're thinking about. So I really want to make it clear, ASP.NET 4.6, we just shipped in August, got some cool new stuff. You should use it if you need the full, you know you're running on the full framework, you know it's going to be running on Windows only, you've got existing production code, you've got web forms code, you've got working code. I would keep that code on ASP.NET 4.6, okay? It's going to be around for a very long time. It's going to keep getting new features. ASP.NET 5, you can continue to run, you can build ASP.NET 5 applications and run them on the full framework. If I had an app that I wanted to migrate from ASP.NET 4.6, for whatever reason, I decided I need it to run cross-platform, I need to take advantage of some new features, but I know it'll run. I can run it on the .NET full framework on Windows. You can go in and you can target only the .NET full framework and that'll work. If you need the features that only .NET Core will provide, so if you need to be cross-platform, if you need side-by-side versioning, so you can publish your entire application and it runs self-contained side-by-side, that's where you use ASP.NET 5 with the .NET Core. All right, so it's all about options. It's not about we're pushing you one way or your old stuff breaks. This is new cool toys, and you get to keep your old toys. So ASP.NET 4.6, I want to highlight some of the stuff. In case I haven't beaten this to death, I'm going to blaze through these slides. But some of the cool features we've just added, so tons of stuff. One cool thing that we added was HTTP2 support. Is anyone taking advantage of this, ASP.NET 4.6 HTTP2 support? All right, you win the prize. So this is a great feature. Here's an example of an application that is delivering a bunch of images. This is before, when it's got to wait for all these images. This is after, right? So that's kind of the difference in network traffic just by enabling HTTP2 support. So this is an example of, you know, people are worried about what is Microsoft doing about ASP.NET 4.6. There's tons of stuff in there, and I encourage you to kind of dig into it and see what's there. Who here is building or supporting web forms applications? I expect to see a lot of hands. There's definitely other people that are like, Okay, I've worked in the industry. There are tons of huge apps out there. So I encourage you, if you're building with web forms applications, to take advantage of these new features we're shipping you. Here's another one that people don't think about, is Visual Studio 2015 includes a lot of features for modern web dev. So that includes things like NPM, Bower, Grunt, Gulp. So all those things you can use in web forms. You can use in any application, you know, you can go in, you could use it actually with just a website. You could create a PHP website and you can use these things, right? So this is an important thing where people kind of like, oh, you're talking about new stuff that doesn't apply to me. I just want to make sure that you kind of get the whole context of what we're talking about. All right, I'm going to blaze through because I want to talk about, this was my slide here. Why is everyone always talking about ASP.NET 5 and 4.6? I'm working on 4.6 and Marsha. Okay, let's talk about new features in ASP.NET 5. So some of the kind of why we did things and what we are trying to achieve with it. So one, I mentioned that thing of totally modular. So the system.webdll is pretty monolithic. It's part of the .NET framework. We assumed you were installing this big framework on your server, and so we just kind of threw a bunch of stuff in there. And there's you can't pick and choose what you're using. So when you spin up your application, you build an ASP.NET 4.6 app, and it spins up, it's loading all of system.web. If you're running a lot of websites on one server, each of those is loading up at least one instance of system.web, right? So it's large. What we really want you to do here is we want to allow you to pick and choose. So if you say, I'm running just an API, or I'm running only a socket server, or I'm serving static HTML and I'm calling back into APIs from an Angular app or something like that, we want you to be able to turn on and off and just pay for what you're using. The ASP.NET in general it's been around for a while, well before it was common to ship things to the cloud. Now we've designed ASP.NET 5 so it's, you know, that's a major use case. So we want you to be able to publish, we want you to be able to take advantage of things in the cloud. An example of that is configuration. So standard configuration in ASP.NET traditionally has been put a bunch of stuff in your web config file. And you're assuming it's on your server, and hopefully your admins keep those things safe, right? And there's better ways of doing it. There's ways to encrypt it or put it in secret storage or things. But in general, people didn't do that as much. ASP.NET 5 has a lot of support for environment variables. What's great with those is you can build using locally on your dev box, you have a secret store that's built into ASP.NET 5. You get the secret store to keep your local dev passwords and things. When you publish it to the cloud, publish it to your IIS server, whatever, those servers can have things stored as environment variables that are hidden away and secured, and the server knows them. You don't need to know them, and you don't need to publish them. You don't need to accidentally check those files into GitHub or into, you know, your source repository, right? So environment variables is a great way to you know, keep your passwords, keep your secrets safe. And, you know, if you go into Azure, for instance, in an Azure website, you can go into your environment variables and they're right there in the portal. And just say, this is my database connection, this is my Redis server, all that stuff, you just fill it right out. So that's an example of how we've kind of optimized a transition to the cloud. Open source, I actually, part of my bonus structure working at Microsoft is how many times I say open source, so I apologize, I just have to say it a lot of times. Faster development cycle, this is definitely something where we want to optimize for building, you know, interactive build and run really quick. An example of this is we're using Roslyn to compile under the hood, so as you're typing, as you're saving, we're able to build just the changes you've made. Also, the way that Visual Studio integrates in with ASP.NET now is that it can actually, it's doing things in memory, and so it's building only the code that's changed, and it's keeping that all completely in memory, and it's able to kind of pass that back and forth very quickly. Let me see. Choose your editors and tools. So I just mentioned Visual Studio. Visual Studio has great support for ASP.NET 5, but you don't have to use it if you want. If you prefer to use, you know, a text editor, of course, if you're working on Mac or Linux, you don't have Visual Studio, you can use Visual Studio Code, or you can use Atom, or you can use, you know, Emacs, you know, knock yourself out. You can use TextMate. So the idea is we've really made it so that not only is it technically possible to build on these other tools, but we've actually tried to optimize that experience. So we support the OmniSharp project. OmniSharp powers the IntelliSense that's in Visual Studio Code, but it's also powers the IntelliSense that's in all these other editors, for instance, you know, Atom and Brackets, and et cetera, and cross-platform and fast. So now I want to kind of dig into some of the top features I think as a developer to be aware of. So these are things when I'm, you know, creating an ASP.NET 5 app, I say, yes, I'm glad I have this, right? So one thing is the project system. So some great things about the project system. In the past, you've got, you know, in an existing ASP.NET application, you've got one folder, right? And if you publish that, if you copied that up to the server, it's got code in it. There's no real kind of clear separation of what's your code and your CSS and your images and what's your C# files and all that. The only way really to kind of keep that stuff separate is with a project file that kind of has to know what's included and what's not. So going forward, everything that's in www.root is assumed to be public. So if you want to put an image in your application, there's a www.root folder, and that's where you put it. That's, you kind of know everything that's in there, that's public. Everything that's not in there is private. So if you have code, if you have just whatever kind of stuff, anything that's not in there is not going to be served through the app. So let's take a look at that. So I'm going to do a little file new project business. So I'm running Visual Studio 2015 Enterprise because I have no idea why. You could do everything I'm doing today in the whatever it is called now for the free community one. right? So here, so I create a new application. I'm creating a web app. This by default is going to say individual user accounts. I'd actually kind of recommend that most of the time if you think you're going to need someone to log into your site. If you're not, if you're just building a test app or something like that, I recommend building without authentication. It's just a little quicker. It's a little simpler. You don't have things for login and for database and that kind of stuff. So, all right, so it's going out and it's creating the application for me. Once it does, we're going to kind of tour around what's in here. So I live on the edge. I don't use source control. Maybe some of you do. Oh, it's unhappy with me for saying that. Okay. So first of all, one thing it's doing is it is saying it's restoring packages. So what that means is, remember I said everything's a NuGet package? So file new project, everything that's pulled in is pulled in via NuGet packages. So let me see. I think Zoomit stopped working on me. So I'll zoom with this. Okay. So let's tour around through here a second. So first of all, I mentioned this www root. So everything that's in here, you can assume is public. This is stuff that people can request. One thing, webconfig is gonna be blocked out, but CSS, images, JavaScript, et cetera, that's all stuff that you assume is gonna be served, right? Things that are not in there, you'll see here, for instance, we've got our Bower, JSON, or Gulp file, et cetera. Those are things that are, these are examples of JavaScript that's in my application, but I don't want to serve it to customers, right? So that's kind of those examples. So I guess I wanted to kind of work through my slide here to keep organized, so I'll pop back and forth in here. So the second thing is, it's code-based configuration. So the idea here is, in the past, you would use webconfig. You would have one big XML file, and all your configuration goes in there. Your handlers, your database connection strings, and all that kind of stuff. And everyone is so scared of that webconfig file, because if you mess it up, you'll break stuff, right? It's really scary. It's also really hard to debug. If you get something wrong in there, your handler just doesn't load, or your module doesn't load, or you don't connect to your database. I've spent so many hours trying to troubleshoot, like, what's wrong in here, right? So there is no webconfig file. You'll see some occasionally in here, because if you're using IIS, we can use a webconfig file to give it hints about things. But in general, you don't need webconfig files at all. So to do most of our configuration, that all happens in startup. So this is my startup CS. So you'll see some things with this. It is code-based, so you can step through, you can put a breakpoint in here, and you can say, I would like to, why isn't this loading, or why does it think I'm in, why am I in development when I think I'd be in production, et cetera. So you'll see kind of a standard thing in here where you can kind of configure services, and then you go and you set how you would like them to act, right? So code-based configuration. Another thing is Grunt, Gulp, and Bower integration. So I mentioned before that those are built into Visual Studio 2015. You can use them for any application. But in ASP.NET 5, we've kind of moved from trying to ship JavaScript libraries and things like that via NuGet, and we really said, you know what? Everyone else in all the web development community is shipping stuff via Grunt, Gulp, Bower. That's where all these packages are, via NPM and Bower, that's where the packages are. We don't want you to have to wait until somebody ships them out on NuGet, so that's what we're relying on. So you'll see here, for instance, file new project, we've got these dependencies brought in via Bower. Now, this is all up to you. If you don't like this, if you don't want to bring in your packages via Bower, it's up to you. As long as it ends up in your www root folder, you can get your JavaScript files however you want, right? But we've found that this is kind of a pretty good way to get packages and install them. So for instance here, if I wanted to add in, say, like jQuery UI, right? So here now we've got support in here for loading versions. You can't see this, but that's the version number, and it automatically went out and said what the latest one is. Then when I save it, it's automatically, you'll see here, my dependencies, it says restoring. So it's actually going out, here's my Bower, and it's actually just pulled in jQuery UI. All right? So this is an example of how that just kind of simplifies things, and all the latest packages are always up available. That's kind of how we're assuming you're getting those. Also on, let's zoom out here. Dependencies. All right, so we're tracking dependencies a little bit differently because we know that everything is brought in via NuGet. So here's where these are brought in. You'll notice here this application is targeting both the .NET full framework, so this is DNX 4.5.1, and here is DNX Core 5.0. So you'll see here these are the top packages, right? And in order to find out why those are brought in, I could go into my project JSON. So here's my project file. And so these are the packages I'm pulling in. So say for instance, I've brought in MVC. So now we can go in and we can look at my dependencies. And I can say, yep, there's MVC. And MVC relies on some other packages, so these are the ones that it brought over. Right? So you can kind of drill and you can see exactly what's being loaded there. I'm kind of moving fast because I've got a lot of demos and stuff I want to show you, but that's kind of some of the main things. One other one I just pointed out, there was Project JSON. So there is no CS proj file. One of the biggest advantages of that is that Project JSON doesn't have this strict list of here are all the files that are included in my application. This is really all that's there. So that's the entire Project JSON. So anything that is in this folder is included in the project. And so we don't have to keep the strict list. One of the best advantages of that is that you don't run into source control conflicts anymore, right? When two people add different files to the project and now your project files need to be merged, et cetera. So that's not an issue here. I can add in 20 different CS files into this and my project file doesn't change at all. All right, so that is that. Let's move on to the new pipeline. So I'm just kind of staying in here so I can pop right back up. So the idea here is I mentioned stuff about webconfig used to be where we had all our handlers and all our modules and stuff, and that was kind of where we handled all that stuff. Now, because everything's all middleware, instead, it's all turned on and off via that startup CS. It's configured there, and you can add or remove it or move it up and down this pipeline. So let me give you an idea what I'm talking about there. So here is, in my startup CS, I'll show you an example of here's how we turn on MVC, right? So we say services add MVC. So MVC is a form of middleware. And then here we configure it. So down here we say use MVC. Another one in this pipeline is this use static files, right? So each one of these is configurable. You just plug them in and add them, so that's kind of how things are added. So we've moved away from the thing where there's kind of these magical handlers and modules that you turn on and off, and they're kind of going to do their own thing. Here, this is very specific, and you can go in and turn them. You can also write your own. So that's a nice feature, and you'll see that that's kind of a common thing. Someone will ship a package or a library, and they can include middleware with it. All right, I'm going to rush through this quickly because I want to show how many people here have seen ASP.NET 5 a lot and they want to see some crazy far out demos of new, brand new crazy stuff? Yep. Some, okay, yeah, so I want to make those people happy. Okay, one other big feature here is that we've merged MVC and Web API. So it used to be that MVC and Web API, because of the way they shipped, MVC shipped building on top of system.web. So we had web forms, then we shipped MVC, and we built MVC to kind of run on top of that same infrastructure. By the time we built Web API, we said, well, we want to follow the same conventions. We still want to have controllers, and we want to have model minding and DI and stuff. But we don't want to rely on system.web being under the hood, because we kind of knew that we wanted to move in this direction. Web API was kind of a first step towards what we're moving to now. And so because of that, they had to run separately. They had to be different things because MVC had dependencies on system web. So what that meant is if you built, say, a really cool filter for MVC, you couldn't use it with Web API because they had different base classes and stuff. So what we've done now is it's all one thing. We've combined them together. So really the idea is that you can, in a controller, it's just a controller, and your controller can function as an API controller. Now, if you've got existing web APIs, people will say, wait a minute, did you break all my stuff? And we actually have this thing called a web API compat shim. So if you've got existing APIs, you can use this web API compat shim. It's available via NuGet. The code's on GitHub, of course. And you can, you know, all your web API controllers will keep working the same way they were. And it really kind of goes to some extreme things to, you know, make sure that things don't break and things stay the same. So, but in general, it does make things a lot easier that you can just create a controller and you can say, this is my controller that is for customers, and it's going to serve the view, but it's also going to support APIs, and it's going to return JSON, or it's going to do whatever, and I don't have to kind of do this weird JSON result thing. I can take full advantage of a web API model. All right, one other feature I want to kind of overview before I dig into some more demos is tag helpers. So the idea with tag helpers is that it just kind of cleans up your view code. So in Razor, we built these things called HTML helpers. And the way they worked is they ran C-sharp code, or they run C-sharp code, and they generate HTML. And they can do things like bind to your models and then create, you know, form elements or things like that. It works pretty well, but it starts to get a little messy when you're doing things like here in this top row, we've got a label, and we want to set a class, and we want to use all these bootstrap classes. Well, a few problems just off the bat here is class is a reserve word in C#, so we have to prefix it with this @ sign. And then we're using all these bootstrap classes here on the right, like call-md-2. But since it's just a simple string, I don't get any kind of IntelliSense or any kind of, you know, anything telling me that I've typed it wrong. So instead, with tag helpers, we can use something like the second line, where you're actually, it looks like you're typing HTML, and you know, this is actually the parts that say ASP-4 or whatever are going to be compiled, turned into HTML, but you can kind of edit it as if it was HTML. So you get the advantage of the HTML editor. So a better kind of more full example of that, here's an example of a login form. And you'll see kind of we're jumping back. Is it HTML? Is it CSS? It's a little of both. So this is the example of what it looks like now with tag helpers. So you can just go through. You can create clean-looking HTML that's easy to understand. Designers on your team can look at this and not get scared or confused or mess it up. I mean, this is pretty straightforward. And then you can put in things like, you know, span validation 4 or input 4. And this is, it's able to say, like, okay, I'm going to bind this. I'm going to fill in the username to this. And you can create your own. Let me show you. I'm going to skip over that one. So I think this really kind of sums it up right here, is this idea right here. This is what tag helpers are. You can see we've got some other tag helpers that are up in the GitHub application, and I'm going to show you a cool sample using tag helper in a second, so I'm just going to kind of move ahead to that. All right, now it's time to fail. Let's break some stuff. So first I wanted to show you some things with performance. So we've been doing some really cool stuff with this new web server we're working on called Kestrel. And so I wanted to show a few examples of actually running some of these benchmarks. So we've been working in this repo. So there's this ASP.NET benchmarks. And who here watches the weekly or kind of weekly community stand-up that we do for ASP.NET 5? OK, so that's out. I encourage you, if you're interested in ASP.NET 5, which hopefully you are because you're here, if you go to live.asp.net, so this will show when these are. So this is Scott Hanselman and Damian Edwards and I get together and we talk about, you know, what's new, what have they been building, you know, what's we take questions, live questions from the community. We did one last night. So I mean, this is one that I did from my hotel room last night. So you know, this is kind of good way to kind of keep up to date with things. But a common thing we've been covering lately has been performance because of this Kestrel server. People are really excited about it, and we really want ASP.NET 5 to be fast. We want it to be really fast. Okay, so what they've been doing is they've got these Tech Empower benchmarks. So these are common benchmarks. If we go to GitHub, Tech Empower. So they've got these benchmarks, framework benchmarks, and they publish these regularly, and they'll say these are the fastest servers and these are the slower servers. The fastest ones are a lot of time these experimental ones, or you know, ones that are very, very optimized for being incredibly fast, and they're not really general purpose web servers. So when you look at that list, a lot of web devs will say, I don't really know any of the first top, you know, 10 or 15 or whatever, but our goal is to move ASP.NET way up there, right? So what I did is I went and grabbed some of these. So I'm going to try and run through a few of these. So I've got, they have a lot of different frameworks listed. I went and I grabbed a few representative ones. And the ones I thought I would start with is, okay, I've got an ASP.NET one. So that is, it's just an ASP.NET, you know, 4.x application, right? So that is in here. So for this one, I can just go and I think I just open it up and run it. Now, I'm running these on my laptop on stage. This is not a lab environment. I'm not wearing a lab coat. This is definitely like just some crazy random, you know, I mean, we're getting orders of magnitude, right? But there's my big disclaimer. However, in the ASP.NET team room, they have a thing, they call it the Smurf Lab, because I guess that sounds better than Perf Lab. And they have a 10 gigabyte switch, and they have all this, I mean, they've got a pretty good setup. And it's not, they're not trying to prove anything to anyone, they're trying to prove to themselves and trying to localize, you know, what can we do faster? How do we compare? How do we stack up, right? So their setup is a little bit more organized than mine is. So I'm going to say run without debugging. I'm going to get this running. And what they're starting with and what I'm showing here is the plain text benchmark. So what the plain text benchmark does is it returns a string that says something like hello. So this is kind of what the team's doing to get started with this, and I think it makes sense, is start with, you know, the really raw core, the smallest kind of benchmark, and then build up to things that are actually hitting the database and doing more advanced things. So this is not, this has seemed to crash my browser with plain text, which is a little bit scary. So let's do that again. And in the meantime, while it's doing that, I'm going to bring up a command prompt. And I am not using what they're using on the team. So yeah, here you can see this says hello world. That's all it does. And there's specific rules about what you're allowed to optimize and cache and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to ping this, and I'm using Apache Bench. Apache Bench is not the best one to use, really. There's some things it doesn't pipeline well. It doesn't take advantage of everything. So the team actually uses WRK. And that runs only on Linux, and they've got that all part of their lab and stuff. But it, kind of for quick orders of magnitude, this will work, right? So here I can run AB, and then I can give it my parameters and tell it what I want to hit. So I'm going to say AB, and then dash, and I want to hit it, let's say 50,000 times, or let's go 100,000. And concurrency, let's say 50. And then we want to hit this URL. So this is actually, you know, I mean, I did this just kind of hacking around a little bit. This is kind of fun to run if you want to grab these benchmarks. I did have to hack with them a little bit. For instance, like the Node one that I pulled down, I'm only doing the plain text one. So I just kind of shut off the stuff that's hitting the Mongo server and stuff like that, right? So, okay, so we'll zoom in here. So it's firing off all these requests, and what we want to see is requests per second. So we're going to see this has done 50,000. That's actually quite a lot of requests. I mean, it's spinning through a lot of requests, and it's good to keep in mind that, you know, your average website never gets anywhere near anything that's going to approach like these kind of numbers. But still, we want to know how efficient we are, right? So there we're at 80,000, 90,000. And moment of truth. So what was our request per second? And we got, okay, 1,900 requests per second. That's pretty good, all right? So now let's go, let's exit that. Let's pop over to, I've got a node server that's gonna do the exact same thing. It's gonna return, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm gonna pop over another. Everyone remember 1,900, because I'm gonna forget it, all right? So here's a neat trick on Windows. You can go, if you want a command prompt in a window, there's a lot of different things you can install, but you can actually just go in the address bar and do cmd dot, and that's going to open a dot means current directory, and cmd should pop open that directory, or that seems to be running slow though. Let's try one more thing. There, all right. So now I'm gonna say, node, and I've already installed, you know, restored packages and all that. And then it's app.js. Okay, so my node server's running, and that's on port 8080. So I'm going to go through here, and it's the exact same thing, and all I have to do is change this. I'm not trying to prove anything to anybody. I have no idea. I don't even remember which one's faster or slower. Again, this is like, the team knows they've got a lot of work to do, but they're really kind of pushing for ASP.NET 5 Kestrel to be fast. This is seeming slightly faster than that ASP.NET one. And another disclaimer here, the ASP.NET, existing ASP.NET benchmark, there's another one in there called ASP.NET Stripped. And what they did is they removed basically everything, every handler, every module, everything. And so it's technically ASP.NET, but it's really not taking advantage of anything that's in there. And it is faster, but it's, even in the benchmark themselves, they're like, we kind of question if anyone would ever use anything like this, you know? So, okay, so how did this one do? This did 2,579 requests per second. So we went from ASP.NET, which was 1,900, this is 2,500, all right? Now, I got a little bit smarter for my ASP.NET 5 benchmark, and I actually created a batch file that's going to spin this up. So this is running the benchmark that I found out on, and I talked to Damien and got information. You know, this is their benchmark here, right? So I grabbed his code. So this has spun that up. Here it's running on port 5000. So this is waiting, and it's going to run 100,000 to all the same parameters. All right, and we just got 26,654 requests per second. So that is significantly faster, right? 10 times? I mean, my math's not that good, but I'm thinking. So this is not saying that we're better than Node or anything, right? This is saying that we're going in a really great direction, because at least at this plain text level, we're pretty fast. What they're doing in the Smurf lab is they've gotten up to, I think they said, just about 500,000 requests per second. And again, this is starting at plain text, and they're going to build up. But so the idea is really this is an advantage you should look for. This is something that we're expecting with Kestrel, that it's going to be very fast. As you start adding features in, as you start hitting your database, as you start adding in all these other things, you're going to pay a cost for that. It's going to slow your server down. But at least you should be able to start from a framework that's pretty fast. All right, I've got a few others. I already know, I mean, I've got 5 minutes left, and I've got so many fun demos. So I want to show, I think, let's go with globalization real quick. And then after, yeah, localization. So I want to show, there's actually a couple I want to show. So I've got two localization samples to show you, and one is, so who here builds sites that have to be localized? It's very common. Every time I speak outside of the US, people come up to me and say, like, what is wrong with you guys? When are you going to localize ASP.NET, right? It's finally happening. I'm excited about this. So some things that we've got in here, this is out on the localization repo in the GitHub, you know, ASP.NET apps or organization, so you can check it out. So this has first-class support for localization. And this actually is all done, just this is writing everything out directly online, right? So this is very simple. This is not using MVC or anything. So I'm going to run this. And the point here is that I'm going to be able to select a, there's build errors. That's good. Maybe this one might just get skipped then. All right. So the point with this one is that it ran in my hotel room right before I came over here. That's awesome. The point with this is that it's built in. It's built in support for localization. So you can do things like you can say context, write culture, select options, et cetera. You can call into things that will work with that. I'm going to go straight to the, I have another one that I want to show off, which is, I think, this one. So we've also built this into MVC. So the things I'm going to show you here is that you can use localization in your backend code, and you can also use it in your views. So I'll show you, first of all, how that's configured. You can go in and you can set your localization directly in, like you can have it just read from a query string. All right, so here I've gone in and set this up. So this is, I've said, here are some supported cultures, and then I've turned on those localization. And then all I'm saying here is, use request localization. So that's this, use request localization. Then because I do that, I can do things like in my controller. So here I've got a controller, and I did two things. First of all, I add in this string localizer thing. So using dependency injection, my home controller, I inject a string-like localizer for the home controller. You don't have to do this. You can wire it up manually. But the nice thing is that it's automatically going to be able to find this resource file. So here I've got this resource file. It's home controller ENGB. And it's able to find that. So in this, so here I've got a name and a value. So the nice thing here is the way that they've done this, I think, is pretty slick. Their strings, their keys for their localization is actually the default language. So here I say, you know, view data. If it doesn't find things or if there's nothing to override, it's just going to use the key. Otherwise, it'll be able to look it up. So it makes it a lot easier for you in your application, in your view code, and in your controller code to read it and actually understand things. All right? I've got two more minutes left. I'm going to show, let me see. Just showed that. Tag helpers, I got to show that. So there's one other thing that's pretty cool. This is something that Steve Sanderson worked on, and he's going to be talking later today, and he does awesome, amazing things with the web and ASP.NET in general. So you should definitely see his talk. But one thing that he is looking at now is how can we enable ASP.NET to interact more with other things out there, like, for instance, Node and Angular and stuff like that. So this is crazy prototype. But he gave me permission to show it, as long as I said it's just crazy prototype and we're not promising anything. But the idea here is I've got an Angular app. And in my Angular app, here's my view. So here's my Angular index, or my index page. And it's just got an app, right? So here it says app loading. Right? So if I run this, it's going to have to actually, you know, it's got to load it. It's got to wait for it's got to call back to the server, and it's got to get the resources and stuff. So waiting on that. So then what I'm going to show is there's two cool things going on with this. One is that we're using When is it Steve like did this really cool stuff to hook up this pre-rendering thing? But the other cool thing is that we're able to wire it up into the view. There we go. Okay, so this is kind of your standard. This is this MVC Music Store. It's using Angular, and you're gonna see a thing where it says loading, and it's calling back to the server, and then once it's done loading, it's going to be, you know, this Angular app. But that's not a really good experience. We're waiting here for it to render. My computer's running slow for some reason, but that just makes it very obvious that it's not really the greatest experience, right? So instead, we're going to take this and I'm going to replace it with a different view. So now I'm going to hold, and I'm going to use this awesome one. Okay, so two cool things are happening here. Number one is, Steve hooked this up so that it's actually pre-rendering. All right, I don't have time to show you any of this, but you can look, there's a Node Services package out there. But the way it's wired up here is actually just by putting this code here, and this actually, the tag helper thing picks that up and runs it. And then tag helpers are composable, so we can wrap that inside this cache thing and run it. So if I run that, that's going to show that it's actually going to compile it, and the first view of that page is actually going to be pre-rendered. It's an Angular app, but it's going to pre-render it on the server. So I think I'm out of time, but as I'm kind of waiting for, or you know, spinning this up, just kind of in closing, I want to pop over to my slides here. All right. The things I wanted to point out at the end of my slides are that, there it is. So it's pre-rendered on the server. So we don't have that kind of loading thing. Things I'd encourage you to remember or to take away from this: ASP.NET 5 or ASP 4.6, the current shipping one. Awesome, cool stuff happening. ASP.NET 5 RC coming out this month. It's not shipping yet, but a Go Live license is coming with the RC. It is open source, and we encourage you to get involved. And you can find out more some of these things. So you can watch Connect next week. There's going to be some cool announcements explaining kind of what's going on next. Channel 9, we've got, of course, the Connect things. We've got an MVA on ASP.NET 5. And we also have the MVP Summit. We actually recorded all the sessions at the MVP Summit. We've posted three of them already. So you can see, for instance, Steve Sanderson giving a demo that I just showed there and didn't have time to. He kind of goes through it in depth. So you can look at those on Channel 9. And then on the ASP.NET 5 site, we're going to be posting things. And I encourage you to watch live ASP.NET, and you can watch the weekly stand-ups. All right, thanks a lot for your time.